The topic for this particular seminar, Bridging College and Community Strategies for Student Success, is the touchstone for those of us working in the college environment. What the folks in Muskogee are managing to accomplish is what we all strive for, what we write grants to try to help us do, and is much easier said than done. The good people working out there in Muskogee have started off with a community effort to end poverty. They started working directly with people from poverty and using information from the people from poverty to inform their work. And they now are working with colleges and healthcare employers, both in the educational area and the student support area, as well as employment. Education and a good paying job are two of the best ways out of poverty. We have a lot of people to talk with us today, and so I would like to not say much more so that we give them the maximum amount of time. And if we have time at the end for questions, that will be great. If we don't, find us on Facebook and put your questions in there. I'd like to turn it over to Muskogee. I'm not sure who is going to speak first, so whoever wants to speak first, please go ahead and start, introduce yourself, and take it away. Thank you.
Hi, this is Tom Martindale. I'm the coordinator for the program here in Muskogee. We are just completing our second full year of implementing the Bridges Out of Poverty construct here. And I guess the important thing to say relative to this audience is in the very beginning, we recognized the importance of higher ed, and we're fortunate enough to have Lisa Wade Roche involved with us from the very start. Now, Lisa, through her relationships with people not only in the healthcare field, but with people from higher ed, Lisa became the focal point for all that activity from the very beginning. And just, I guess, a community comment here to begin. Phil Duvall and others shared with us from the very start that different communities tend to wind up with different niches in terms of specific things that they might be doing and getting involved with that were different from perhaps some of the other communities. And I think we just recognized early on that the professional healthcare area and higher education was going to be a major emphasis for us here in Muskogee. We have the Indian Capital Technology Center, a VOTEC here in Muskogee, and we also have three colleges here in Muskogee, Bacon College and Northeastern State University and Connor State College. So Lisa really was the point person for all of the contacts between healthcare and the community and higher ed and beginning to make all that happen. She can share how those contacts were made, how we began the process from introducing, understanding, and engaging under-resourced college students to our alternative high school here, to actually doing training for under-resourced college students at two of the colleges. And Dr. Cass is here representing Bacon College. We also have Angela Martindale, who is a professor here at the School of Nursing for Connor, that will be able to share some particular insights in how she's been able to use some of the understanding and engaging under-resourced college students material to develop relationships and enhance relationships in the classroom. So with that, I'll kind of turn it over to Lisa and between her and Kathy, they can begin to talk about the higher ed piece.
You go ahead, Lisa.
Okay, excellent. This is Lisa, and thank you for the opportunity, Carla and Barbara. We appreciate it. You know, I think that the chance to engage healthcare and higher ed came about as a result of coalition efforts within our community. You know, I had been interested in the Bridges Out of Poverty work for years after having moved here. And when Tom and I went out to Denver to get trained a couple of years ago, it was sitting in the Getting Ahead Facilitators Workshop and watching a video in which one of the schools was talking about how Getting Ahead actually helped improve retention rates among, I think it was LPN students. And that, at that point, a light bulb went off in my head because I had been working on federal grants trying to identify how we can improve our retention rate among nursing students here locally, because we really have a significant challenge there. And through the Eastern Oklahoma Healthcare Coalition that I work with, it's actually a collaboration of all of the area K through 12 and higher ed institutions, but also area healthcare providers and employers and workforce development organizations. And our challenge is trying to recruit, train, and retain adequate workforce to meet our healthcare needs. Healthcare is our second biggest employing industry in this area, and we just don't have the people to fill the jobs. And so, based on that, you know, I was able to go back to the coalition and in working with Tom, put together a model and encourage, you know, the presidents and deans of the colleges and universities, the superintendents, and, you know, even the CEOs at the hospitals to consider a Bridges Out of Poverty journey with us, helping them see that if we can improve student retention and improve employee retention, that ultimately, you know, we're getting at our strategic goal while also helping those we serve. And, you know, they were interested initially to see numbers and for us to figure out how to prove that an investment in this would be worthwhile. And those numbers are still being developed. You know, understanding and engaging under-resourced college students is still fairly new. And, but they took a leap of faith with us. And so we have been able to host the trainings at Bay Cone and also at Connor State College with staff and faculty. We've taken the trainings into the alternative education, the alternative high school here in town as well. I mean, this is in addition to all the other Bridges Out of Poverty trainings we do here locally. We also hosted and facilitated a Getting Ahead class specifically for healthcare students and employees on the lower end of the wage range within our healthcare employers. And that actually was a great opportunity. And the nice thing in working with them, not only were we, you know, presenting the Getting Ahead information in a way that was beneficial for the participants, the investigators, but we were also using examples that come from the healthcare world in terms of how this information will apply to them when they're interacting with patients in the future. And so it kind of gave double meaning and benefit for them. And now we're looking at working with the colleges to integrate the investigations into Economic Class in America material into their curriculum as well. So, for example, at Connor State College, we're right now looking at integrating that into their Strategies for Success program and some of the orientation efforts as well. And I think that may be true over at Bay Cone too. But I think what was really helpful was starting with the coalition, where we had this coalition of decision makers that were in important places, you know, both academically and also in the healthcare world, who decided to support us and join us on this journey and make their resources available as well and invite us in. And I think, you know, without that collaborative coalition of decision makers, it would have been a real challenge. Would you like to add anything, Kathy?
Well, I'll pick up here. It's from that coalition. Our Vice President, Robert Brown, is on that coalition. So probably about a year and a half ago, I said to him, okay, out of everything that I've read, the thing that would help our faculty and staff most is the Bridges Out of Poverty work. And he said, well, then you need to talk to Lisa Wade Roche. And so that kind of started us here. So from there, I talked to Lisa and Tom, and so all that did was get me stimulated and excited about the possibilities. But just because your vice president sends you that way doesn't mean he's all ready to drop everything for that. So it took about a year or more from that point to convince him that our whole staff and our whole faculty needed full-time, needed to be trained. And so, I mean, we even had it all set up, and then they backed out on us, and Tom and kept having to tell me to be patient. But we did have 2 days of training. It was six hours for under-resourced students. And as soon as I changed the language from poverty to under-resourced college students, I had much more acceptance on campus. And I work out of the Division of Academic Support, which also includes first-year students and the TRIO, Student Support Services Program. So we're already working with so many students that are under-resourced, and I might add underprepared. And so we were able to schedule it was 2 days. Part one was offered twice on the first day, and part two was offered twice on the second day, so that departments could send half of their staff and then get the other staff. And I think we probably did about 95% of our faculty and staff. And we had a few people, administrators included, that would come for part of the time and not the rest of the time, which I think is to be expected. So we did that, and now we're looking at, so what does that really mean? So I've been working a little bit with financial aid on how they communicate with our students and thinking about those hidden rules and how that might affect their interactions with financial aid. We've been talking a lot about mentoring and relationships, and that everybody needs to build positive relationships with every student. And we've got probably 35% of our students are African American, and 35% are American Indian, and then the other 30% are a mixture of Caucasian, Latino, international, et cetera. So we have a very, very diverse population, which adds a whole other dimension to our challenges. So, and with that, Angela and I have not compared notes yet. So, even though we're in the same small town, and they're just kind of up the road from us, so I think we have a lot to learn still from each other.
Yes, and we'll get together. Go over there, Kathy. Okay. Hi, this is Angela. I'm kind of coming from the inside looking out. I'm specifically working in the nursing department with my colleagues and faculty, just specifically handling nursing students. Some of the challenges that we're undergoing, there's some transition and some things in leadership and reorganizing in the nursing department. So right now, the general group is not open to hearing about under-resourced college students and what we can do to fix it. However, with this transition for pay with related to attrition rate, I expect people to be more open-minded to the trainings in this. Specifically, what I can do and what I have been doing for myself, because I have been trained in this and I've read the book and I know what it takes to develop relationships with the students, is do just that. From the very beginning, the first time that I see the student, I begin right there developing the relationship with the student. And that will carry on through their time at Connors. Hopefully that's what I see. In the classroom, continuing with the relationship building, starting each class with new and good, with each student,
breaking down the barriers of I'm the teacher and you're the student, and make it more of an open learning environment where they have their input and they're free to express their feelings and their way of learning. And I think in nursing is already hard enough as it is as a subject. To me, this is so much more important for us to do that in nursing, because we can't have any other aspect for students to be successful that's going to hinder their success. So more important is it for not just all college students and under-resourced college students, but especially in nursing and healthcare. And research says that healthcare is a promising way for students who are under-resourced college students or people in poverty to get out. Healthcare is kind of a promising ticket to get them out of poverty. So we see those students a lot. Let's see, what else do I have? There are a lot of future plans that we have scheduled as a department to implement, and hopefully that will be coming in the near future. And I guess I will keep everybody posted on how it goes and what we're going to do.
One of the things we've also seen here locally is an interest among local school K-12 superintendents to integrate some of this material into concurrent courses offered on their facilities to high school juniors and seniors. And so, for example, at Connor State College right now, about 90% of the – it's an open enrollment junior college. About 90% of the students coming in qualify for Pell Grants. And about 80% need some kind of developmental class once they get here. And so we are now in conversations with three school districts, and it appears that at least in two of them we'll be starting concurrent classes this upcoming fall that will integrate the investigations into economic class in America with a very successful strategies for success class that the college has already been running. And so we'll see how, you know, approaching that concurrent, this will be new, you know, for all the schools, but see how approaching the combination of curriculum in this way might encourage, you know, more of those students to go on to college and also help increase retention rates once they get there. And it's nice to see the superintendents approaching us about it, you know, as opposed to us trying to twist arms to get in.
And this is Tom again. From a community perspective, one of the things that we've tried to be mindful of is, regardless of how carefully we try and craft our strategy, presentations don't always produce results that are immediate. So once again, it goes back to relationship building and, you know, what Phil refers to as planting the seeds and then giving things an opportunity to grow. Now, personally, I'm an incredibly impatient individual. So this was probably the largest struggle that I had in the beginning and still with being able to do just exactly that, with being able to get in front of audiences when we could and where we could, regardless of who was in that particular audience, but having the message be consistent and clear, which was, you know, getting people to understand the complexities of the poverty issues at the community level, and then seeing what role higher ed and the healthcare profession played in all that. And we were fortunate in having the Action in Muskogee project that came as a result of a recent mayoral election and city council election that we had. So the new mayor and city council were really energetic in pushing what amounted to a community-wide strategic plan. For 2.5-3 months, we had 250 or more volunteers that met every other week to discuss the future of Muskogee and what that was going to entail. all the different moving parts that were required. And that was where seeds that we had planted 2 years ago began to get some fertile footing, because the different committees that were created then began to see how higher ed, healthcare, and all these other kinds of things were interrelated to the overall effort. And another good example, when Dr. Cass was talking before about the two-day training that we did at Bacone College, one of the things that the administration out there continued to reinforce during our 2 days of training was that the college was going through some changes, and they wanted to use the understanding and engaging under-resourced college students structure and talking points and relationship building to get departments talking to other departments as they began to brainstorm different ways to approach different issues that they had going on at the college. And I thought that was quite novel to frame the work in that particular way, so that regardless of how soon they got the immediate classroom work going on, that the immediate benefit would be enhanced communication and better relationships between department to department, not just between faculty or staff and the student body.
That's true. I think this is Kathy again. We definitely had numerous objectives in trying to get this training. Certainly, we wanted faculty, before they could even put some of this into their curriculum, we felt faculty just needed to understand the hidden rules of class and how they're making judgments every day out of their middle class mentality. Over 80% of our students would fall in the under-resourced category, possibly even 90%. And so all of our, I think 98% of our students are on some sort of financial aid. So it was a matter of, you know, yes, we want to use some of those strategies, and yes, we want them to implement some of these things into their curriculum, but the first thing was just to get them to recognize that their students aren't trying to aggravate them on purpose. They're coming from a different place. And to piggyback on Angela's comment about trying to fix things, you know, I don't know that there is a fix exactly, but I know that as you work with faculty and staff, if it means more work, you sure have to convince them it's going to be worth it. And so basically we were saying, yes, you need more work. The other thing I wanted to say is that I am in charge of the first-year seminar for freshmen and first-year transfer students, and we are planning to implement a unit of this with building financial capability in each one of those sections, so that every student gets a little of this as they begin. And then hopefully in the spring we'll have a course that is, they're coming in to take first year seminar, but we're going to switch texts on them and use the investigation text. So that's kind of where we are right now.
I am so excited to hear you say that you're going to use investigations for your first year experience course. I'll be looking forward to hearing how that works out. I want to share a resource with you.
We're going to pilot it. I hate to interrupt, but I want to clarify.
Yeah.
We're going to pilot it first in the spring and see how it goes. And
it's always a pilot.
Right.
I understand completely. One of the things, just, you know, kind of piggybacking on how can you move faculty and staff forward into changing behaviors and doing different kinds of work or more work. Tom's struggle with patience. I share that character flaw, Tom. it's hard. I mean, sometimes it does take quite a while for these concepts to incubate in a person's mind. First, they start to look at their students or their clients differently. Then they start, you know, eventually to look at themselves differently, which is really then when the motivation to change your behavior really takes hold, when you start to realize that your societal experience is just as important and just as important a part of the equation as is your students. It's not just about dealing with the students, it's about dealing with both sides of the relationship. I found this resource, and this is open source material. It's free to use, and it's, there are instructions on the website. It comes from Stanford University School of Design. And I'll give you a second to grab a pen. I'll give you the website. But what it is it's a design thinking tool. It's an activity, a very interactive activity that you can facilitate with groups of people to get them past the idea of let's solve this problem that we think we already know what the solution to it is, and gets them to begin to learn to listen, to understand how differently they will begin to think and design if they really do listen, and sets the stage then for them to consider redesigning their programs or what they do, and also sets the stage with a very non-threatening activity to get people to start talking directly to students, to clients, to community members about poverty and the experience of poverty, so that, again, both sides of the relationship are being addressed. And the address for the Stanford School of Design, which you can just Google and find, it is D, as in design, school.stanford.edu. D, school, at Stanford. Wait, take out the at. That was, you know, I'm staring right at it, and that's what my eyeballs just inserted into the equation. There's no at sign. It's dschool.stanford.edu. dschool.stanford.edu. It's all open source stuff, and it's very interactive and is a fun way to, fun non-threatening way to get folks on the path towards action. I just wanted to put that out there. Tom, I think that it, along with the reminder for the webinar, you had shared with us a model of all of the entities and energy that is interacting in Muskogee to make these wonderful things happen. Do you want to give, I know you've talked about it a little bit, but a kind of 30,000-foot view of who the players are at the table and where is the money and how did you get that? And that's what everybody really wants to know is how did you get money?
Sure. Well, one of the things that, as I attend, you know, under-resourced college student training or Bridges Out of Poverty training or something like that, it seems that the instant that I mentioned that we have a local foundation who is funding 100% of our efforts, the envy of the rest of the group is palpable. So there's good and bad with that. So let me just start with that. The City of Muskogee Foundation was created a few years ago when we sold or did a long-term lease of our local hospital here. And the city took that money and created a foundation with it. It's the foundation's responsibility to distribute back out to the community X number of million dollars of that foundation each year. And matter of fact, today in the newspaper, the results of this year's grant awards came out. So we're very fortunate to have the City of Muskogee Foundation as a funder. Let me take just a minute and explain how that happened. About 3 years ago, the City of Muskogee Foundation, which I happened to be a part of at that time on a particular committee, the Health and Wellness Committee, we invited speakers to come in from literally all over the country to present initiatives that they had funded that permanently moved the needle on something. Our concern with the City of Muskogee Foundation was that we were going to award lots of money in grants, but then look at it 10 or 15 years down the road and not have moved the needle permanently on anything in terms of community good. So a number of people came from across the country, made presentations, and out of all that, we had an Episcopal priest from Bartlesville that came down. That Bartlesville was the first community in Oklahoma, to my knowledge anyway, that began to do Bridges Out of Poverty as a community initiative. And when he shared what they were doing in Muskogee, the foundation the next day agreed unanimously that out of everything they heard, this made the most sense. So they agreed to back it, and they agreed to back it for a five-year period. Father Stevens was able to convince the foundation that this was not something that would produce short-term results, that you had to be in it for the long run, and that at a minimum, if the City of Muskogee Foundation was going to commit to it, it needed to be for a five-year period. So they did that. Let me tell you some of the other players kind of around the hub. And I guess I would describe the hub here in Muskogee as the AIM project, the Action in Muskogee project that I mentioned earlier. I see that as the community hub simply because it provides us with the structure that regardless of whether you're the mayor in the city council or you're involved with healthcare and wellness or you're from community circles, you're from higher ed or you're from public or private education, you have a vehicle to be able to go to one of these committees within the AIM project that is working on something germane to whatever the issue is that you are doing. Now, here's the hope and at least what it's been so far. Oklahoma is arguably as political a state as we have anywhere in the country. So it's very easy for poverty issues to get wrapped up in this maelstrom of politics as opposed to looking for, you know, real solutions to the problems. And our AIM committee is the thing that allows all of our work to become non-political and gives us a venue to move things forward, including actions by the city council or by other elected groups, you know, within the city.
Yeah, I serve as co-chair of the AIM steering committee, and I think one of the opportunities that it provides is trying to build synergies between things that maybe before sat in their own little silos and didn't necessarily work together. So, for example, building the synergies between higher ed, economic development, trying to reduce poverty, trying to improve health outcomes, trying to improve educational outcomes, you know, name your issue. But this provides one place where rather than looking at challenges or opportunities through, you know, a single set of glasses, we have a chance to really take a bigger picture vision and figure out how all this works together and how we really can make progress moving forward for a community where a rising tide lifts all ships. And the fact that poverty was integrated into this process in terms of, you know, recognizing that we can't move toward a strong economy, which is one of the eight initiative areas through AIM, without addressing poverty, you know, that really helped make sure that the Bridges Out of Poverty effort and the community circles effort was integrated not only into the economic effort, but also into education, into health and wellness, into many other things as well.
This is Carla again. It sounds to me that you have something that is so vital to a really successful community program, and aside from money, which is just makes life so much easier, but you are at the table. You are the power players in the community, or if you're not, you're at the table with the power players in the community. So I guess first you have to say whether or not you're a power player. And if you're not, how did you get to that table?
Well, I'm certainly not a power player. This is Kathy.
Who's going to say they are?
This is Kathy, and I've been at Bacon just over 2 years, and I don't even live in Muskogee. I live in Tulsa. And... But since they won't say they're power players, there is one thing that I'd like to add is that Tom can probably explain more. But from my perspective, I see that they have trained through Bridges Out of Poverty just by repeatedly once a month having a workshop, a free workshop, and inviting people throughout the community. So they've been through corporations. Almost all of their ministers have been trained, and then the ministers are connected to other things, and so they definitely are connected. And I don't know how Tom made that happen and Lisa made that happen, but that's what impressed me. And so I then started working with the administration here, saying, you know, we're right here in Muskogee. This is what's happening, and this is what's so important, and we need to be part of the community effort as well as what we can do at Bacon.
Is it challenging sometimes to connect the college with the community?
Yes, it is. I think Connors and Northeastern pull more from the region, and we seem to pull from the region, but also all over the country and even international students, because we're a private school and we have a variety of sports that they don't necessarily have, and just a lot of things here. And but I think that Bacon is becoming more connected to the community, and I think it seems like to me the leaders are realizing, like Lisa said, if you don't start addressing some of these issues in the medical field and in the education field, they're just going to multiply. And in when Tom and Lisa do the workshop, one of the things that they do at the very beginning is to show the statistics on poverty and also and relate that to the national, the state of Oklahoma, and then Muskogee. And then the next part is the number of children on a free lunch, free or reduced lunch. And when you see those numbers, there's no way to deny that there's an issue and that we really need to buckle down and find some solutions and work together.
We have about 15 minutes left, and I don't know if people are, Barbara, are people able to unmute their telephones to ask a question?
Yes.
Please push star 6.
Let's just have people ask questions because I don't have everyone muted. So we'll just take questions as they come up. So if you have a question, the microphone is open at this time.
I'll pause again in a minute and ask for questions, give you time to collect your thoughts out there in the teleconference land. I wanted to go back to the notion of offering investigations as a concurrent enrollment or dual enrollment program. I believe you said that you were going to integrate it into the kind of college success course. I wanted to mention that I've just begun working with one of the faculty from the College of Education here on aligning investigations with some of the core standards. I think at the high school level, as a high school course, the course equates best with a junior year social studies course. Senior year, at least in Ohio, is American government, and junior year it's more sociology, psychology kinds of stuff. So I wanted to make that note. I wanted to ask you, though, with respect to admission requirements for the concurrent enrollment program, do you have admission requirements that allow you to select students who appear college ready or, you know, academically advanced? And if so, do you plan on waiving those or allowing the students in on some sort of alternative admission status?
We have an alternative admission status, and we also have a pre-mester program where we work on basic skills, and a bridge program for our American Indians for the summer before they come in, and numerous pre-collegiate courses to get them up to par on their academics. What we spend our first-year seminar success course on is a little bit of everything, you know, study skills, financial capability, health and sexual knowledge, and, it's everything.
Right.
And then it's not enough time to cover everything, so...
We have had a huge challenge here in Ohio with our dual enrollment programs because funding to the K-12 system has been cut so much. The schools are about half of our schools are wanting to pass on the cost of tuition to the students and their families. Do you have that situation in Oklahoma?
Yes, we do, but we're private. So, we're a private school.
With Connors, at least to the community college, really looking in working with the high schools not to have to pass that cost on, so making at least the courses available for free. I believe that the students do have to pay for the book, but other than that, the course would be free. Right now, there is a 19 on the ACT score requirement to be able to get in, and we know that could preclude some of the students who could most benefit from the course, and so we're looking at how to work with that. But there are plenty of students out there, at least in our communities, that are scoring 19 and above on the ACT, but still don't see a path available to them for attending college, and we're hoping that this will reduce that barrier and help them see that it is possible through the concurrent class with using the investigations text.
Thank you. Are there other questions from our audience? It's always a little awkward to try to ask a question on a conference call because you're afraid that you're going to step on somebody else's sentence, but the complexity of the work that's happening in Muskogee just has me wanting to move there. if you have a lot of rental property available or not, but it certainly sounds like a very rich and deep effort. Tom, any other connections that you'd like to make with respect to how things are operating between the community and the colleges?
Well, I think Kathy mentioned it briefly a moment ago. It's important not to, I mean, for me, it's important not to take your eye off of the basics ball. So while we're doing some pretty unique things in some of the different areas like higher ed or healthcare or some of the other things, what we're continuing to do is offer Bridges Out of Poverty training every month. Now, we have, in coming up on 2 years, trained a little over 500 people in Muskogee in full-day Bridges training. Here's the important part of that for me. We didn't do two workshops with 250 people in each workshop. We did workshops every month where sometimes there would be 15 people in the audience, and it didn't matter. What we kept saying to ourselves is the people that need to be here will be here, and and those that aren't won't. So whether it was an audience of 15 or whether it was an audience of 30 or 40 or whether it's a group, like we have scheduled in July, our entire local Department of Human Services staff complement here in Muskogee has asked for us to come in and train their staff. Now, there's a statewide initiative, and we know emphasis from the State Office of Department of Human Services to get all the employees in Oklahoma trained, and yet they're asking for local training to be done as opposed to training to come out of Oklahoma City. And we think that's a result of different people who have left our workshops going back into their workplaces or, you know, interacting with their circle of friends saying, wow, I learned some things today that I didn't know, and now I have a different view about things. And I think that a community has to maintain that baseline that, you know, for the general population while we're out, you know, doing all this, I call it really specialized work, like with higher ed or healthcare. And Lisa didn't mention it before, but you know, one of the things that she was instrumental in getting the City of Muskogee Foundation to do was sponsor scholarships for healthcare students and ask that they be willing to give 2 years back to the community and then receive that scholarship. I just throw those kind of things out as kind of observations and interesting articles, I guess.
Thank you, Tom. I'll give the third and final call for questions from the audience. Going once. Going twice. Any final remarks or comments from our fine presenters?
I have one story that I would like to share.
Please.
Not because I was looking for it, but because they found us. The Center for Social Development on the campus of Washington University in St. Louis invited Bacone to participate in a curriculum building effort on building financial capability and asset building. And they were really trying to teach social work professors how to prepare social workers to work with their clients on financial capability and asset building. So coming from the Bridges Out of Poverty, I assume that asset building meant a broad look at asset building and not just a financial look at asset building. And you know, I figured they knew what they were doing. It was for underrepresented populations. And we were invited because of our mission with American Indian students. So I went to the curriculum development workshop. They had developed the initial curriculum, and this was like a trial run to prepare us. I was the only one not in social work, and I was also the only participant that was neither American Indian or African American. And we started on Sunday night. By Monday midday, I was asking, well, what about Ruby Payne's work? What about Bridges Out of Poverty? Don't you think that there's a basic need to understand where these clients are coming from? And no one was rude to me, but they didn't answer my question. But then by Tuesday night, we had table sessions after dinner, and the group was divided up into smaller groups. I think I had about six people at my table. Three were American Indian from Montana, two African Americans, and me, and then one of the Washington University personnel was taking notes and asking how he felt about the curriculum at this point. And we had talked maybe 5 minutes, and finally one of the Montana Indians said, you know, the thing about this is you're not really recognizing the fact that most of our students are focusing on survival, and that has to be addressed first. And then the next person said, well, to tell you the truth, this is a middle-class curriculum. And the rest of us said, you're exactly right. And so then the rest of the table session was trying to explain to her why it was a middle class curriculum and the piece of research that they had left out, which would be the bridges of poverty. So I found that quite interesting. I told Tom about it yesterday, and he said, "Yeah, Kathy, you need to share that story." So there are other people doing things and addressing these issues, but they're not addressing them the same way. And it comes out, ultimately it comes out that it has to be addressed. This has to be a part of the picture.
That's a terrific story that illustrates exactly why that sort of design thinking mindset is necessary. Well, we're just about on the hour. I would like to thank Tom, Lisa, Kathy, and Angela for joining us on this teleseminar today to share with us what has been happening in Muskogee at the community level with the healthcare employers and college students, and hopefully soon high school students as well. It's been very informative and enlightening, and I think we need to write you guys up or something, do something along those lines. Thank you very much for joining us. You will receive a link to the teleseminar so that you can share that with others if you wish, and look for us at collegeachievementalliance.com. Send us questions. We love to hear from you. Barbara, anything else?
And look for us on Facebook, www.facebook.com/collegeachievementalliance, all one word. Please go online as soon as you finish today and like us. And you will get notifications of all sorts of interesting free things. So, again, I want to thank our presenters as well. I knew you would do a fabulous job, and you exceeded expectations. So thank you for being with us, and thank you also to all of you who joined us on this teleconference today. And that's all I have to say.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much.